Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Are we still here? Is this thing on?
Hello.
Is this thing on? The system threatened to lock up on me right before that rant, and I just went ahead hoping you could still hear me. Apparently you could. It was just the Chrome browser that was shutting down, but I hope you enjoyed that extended rant. I'm trying to get that one published in the San Francisco Chronicle. We'll see if that gets there. And I teased earlier today via Twitter that I'd be ranting about Kevin Sabet's latest article up on Huffington Post, where he says it's erroneous. It's erroneous to claim that marijuana could help reduce the opioid crisis. So we'll get to that in a special bonus rant coming up after this first segment. So stay tuned for that. We'll get deep into all of that discussion. Also, just a real quick point on the Utah medical marijuana. Yesterday, I went off on the Utah medical marijuana initiative because it's the latest initiative to have no home grow and no smoking. And they say no vaporization either, right? No smoking, no vaporization. Now, there's at least a sliver of logic behind no smoking. At least you can kind of understand the no smoking side of it. Like, all right, yeah, smoke is, it's hard to justify medically for some people. I can make a case for it, but I understand why they'd want to cut the smoke. But no vaporization? There's no justification for eliminating vaporization as an option for patients. You can't make the smoke argument. You can't make the secondhand smoke argument. You can't make the claim that it's harmful in any way. So that's a problem with that bill. That said, we are talking about Utah, folks. We are talking about Utah. Any medical marijuana we can pass in Utah is worth passing. My worry is the strategy of this, because they're taking a page from the Oregon playbook. Here in the state of Oregon, we tried to pass marijuana legalization in 2012 and failed spectacularly while Washington and Colorado were passing it. And the reason why we failed spectacularly is because we had no national backing. And the reason why we had no national backing and funding is because we put forth a hippie's wet dream for a legalization initiative. Is basically, you know, you could possess a whole bunch, you could grow a whole bunch, the growers would set the prices and run all the commissions, and it was just something that could not get national support. And so we failed in 2012, but we knew we could pass legalization. So as we moved forward in 2014, we went to the legislature and we said, hey guys, look, you know we're going to pass legalization. We know we're going to pass legalization. It's just a matter of whether it's 2014 or 2016, but it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. So why don't you work with us? Why don't we craft some legalization in the legislature? And then you've got a say in what's going on, and we can, you know, come up with something that's amenable to everybody. And our legislature said, nope. Like, oh, okay. So we went ahead in 2014 as we threatened, and national backers wanted us to not move forward in 2014. And we said, nope, we're moving forward in 2014. Strike while the iron is hot. And national backers threatened to withhold funding if we didn't take out home grow, because they thought, well, home grow might be a little too much to swallow. You know, up in Washington state, they didn't allow home grow. And we said, no, we will not do that. And national backers said, well, you know, people are going to worry about the whole stone driving thing, so you better put a per se DUID in there. And we said, no, not going to do it. And we passed it, right? So Utah's taking a page out of that book by presenting this initiative this soon and gathering signatures on it before the 2018 Utah legislature convenes to be able to apply that pressure, to be able to say, hey, look, if you don't work with us for medical marijuana, we're going to go ahead with our initiative and it's going to be more what we like and less what you like. But here's where the problem comes in. Okay. First of all, they're starting their negotiating position out with no home grow and no vaporization. That's where you're starting from. And then you're going to have to give up from that point on to get the legislature on board. How much more compromised would that become? And number two, the chance that Oregon is going to, or the chance that Utah's legislature is going to ignore their chance to come up with legislation when they can look at Oregon and Ohio as two examples where the Oregon example, where they ignored legalization and then had to, after the fact, after it got passed, try to get their will imposed, or Ohio, where the threat of a medical marijuana initiative was taken seriously. And Ohio came up with one, the legislature came up with one, which is far more compromised. That's the if you do and if you don't example from two states that start with an O that inform me that if Utah starts where they're going to start with their initiative, their legislature is going to come back with something far less workable. And then what do you do then? Say, no, we're not going to accept that? I guess you could move forward with your initiative. I'd like them to start at a little more strong negotiating point, though.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
My daughter has diplegia, cerebral palsy, which is sort of from the waist down, so her lower limbs don't work effectively. After age 2.5, she began to show signs of autism and self-injurious behavior. There are many families out there in other states that have similar situations, and they're using medical cannabis, and it's helping their symptoms. It's very difficult as a mom to know that there is a medication out there that is being used effectively in other states, and Texas isn't providing that for patients here. Medical cannabis could greatly improve the quality of life for my daughter. It is absolutely inhumane for lawmakers to keep medical cannabis from patients. Texans deserve better.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I was told by the DART Task Force in Toledo that they're actually sprinkling fentanyl on marijuana now.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
Marijuana.
radical rant.
Simply put, it is erroneous to make the claim that people who use medical marijuana are at lower risk of overdose. That's the statement from the head of the nation's leading anti-marijuana legalization organization, Kevin Sabet, writing on Huffington Post today about the opiate epidemic. Sabet and his Project Samuel are forced to make these kinds of statements for two reasons: the growing public awareness of the opiate overdose epidemic, and the growing understanding that, for many people, marijuana is an effective substitute for or complement to opioid painkillers. Americans are increasingly aware of the studies showing that states with access to medical cannabis show a great reduction in the harms from opioids, including fewer deaths from, overdoses from, addictions to, use of, and prescriptions for these opioids. That awareness has even trickled up to the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who remarked, quote, "I see a line in the Washington Post today that I remember from the 80s. Marijuana is a cure for opiate abuse? Give me a break. This is the kind of desperate argument that's been made out there to just almost a desperate attempt to defend the harmlessness of marijuana or even its benefits. I doubt that's true. Maybe science will prove I'm wrong." End quote. Well, it is proving Sessions wrong. That's why Sabet has to step in with the only tools at his disposal: fear, uncertainty, and doubt, to propose, quote, "that there is insufficient evidence to confirm that legalization of marijuana will reduce opioid use and overdose deaths," end quote. Now remember, anything that Kevin Sabet says about the issue of marijuana should always be followed by, "and that's why we need to keep raiding and arresting people who grow and sell cannabis, and why we need to establish mandatory rehab and financial punishment for those who smoke marijuana." Sabet muddies the waters by throwing shade at advocates for medical marijuana, writing, quote, "Over the years, claims have been made that the drug can kill cancer cells," writes Sabet with mandatory scare quotes, "cure alcoholism, and yes, even eliminate morning sickness," end quote. Now, never mind the fact that those claims are absolutely true. Cannabis or THC has been shown to induce apoptosis or programmed cell death in cancer cells in petri dishes in the lab. And yes, cannabis has been shown to help people dealing with dependency issues to methamphetamine, heroin, and even alcohol. And yes, we have found mothers throughout history, going all the way back to Queen Victoria, who'd been using cannabis to eliminate morning sickness or deal with menstrual cramps. Sabet continues, quote, "When it comes to addressing our nation's opioid epidemic, Americans deserve solutions driven by science and evidence, not ideology or anecdotal evidence," end quote. Well, increasingly, Americans know personally somebody who has recovered from cancer, stopped their problem drinking, eliminated their morning sickness, staved off their seizures, and even kicked addictive opioids thanks to cannabis medicine. Frustratingly for Sabet, the anecdotes of people who are still alive thanks to marijuana are outweighing all the insufficient evidence he can muster. Sabet then drops in some quotes from the National Institute on Drug Abuse, or NIDA, to instill that doubt about marijuana treating opiate issues. Now remember, NIDA is an organization from which the New York Times reported a spokeswoman as saying, quote, "Our focus is primarily on the negative consequences of marijuana use instead of the potential beneficial medical effects of marijuana," end quote. The problem for Sabet is that people are increasingly wary of the government agencies like DEA, like NIDA, like the FDA, that tell them a non-toxic herb is unacceptably dangerous, while approving thousands of percent increases in manufacturing quotas for killer opioids like OxyContin, and deeming thousands of times more potent opioids like fentanyl as safe under a doctor's supervision. Sabat warns, quote, "With the tragic rise in the number of opioid-related overdoses in the U.S., it's no coincidence we're seeing heightened promotion by the marijuana industry touting legalization as an easy solution to this deadly crisis. Is this another concerted effort by the marijuana industry to leverage an issue of real concern for Americans to advance their agenda to commercialize marijuana?" End quote. Well, Sabat plays this big marijuana boogeyman card so that you're distracted from what the real monster, Big Pharma, wants. The restriction of medical marijuana cutting into its business model. Cracking down on the opioid epidemic is already cutting into prescription volumes, and evidence shows medical marijuana cuts it further, to the tune of an average 1,800 fewer pills per doctor per year. But it's kind of hard to demonize a big marijuana that will pay taxes, create jobs, and check IDs when the current weed dealer doesn't, especially as Big Pharma's OxyContin-dealing Sackler family rises to number 16 on the Forbes Billionaire Families list. Sabat, of course, will raise Cain if you say he's shilling for Big Pharma. That's just another distraction from his actual gig, shilling for Big Rehab. Look at his connection of most of his board for Project Sam, and you'll see a whole slew of rehab doctors and clinic owners whose business model depends on drug courts sentencing kids with marijuana to stints in rehab backed with the threat of jail if they fail a piss test. Some of the people on Project Sam's board and leadership team include Dr. Christian Thurstone, the head of a major rehab clinic in Denver, Colorado. Includes Dr. Eden Ivins, who's the director for the Center of Addiction Medicine and Addiction Research Program at Massachusetts General Hospital. We have Judge Arthur Bennett, who's one of those drug court judges. We have Dr. Stuart Gitlow, executive director of the Annenberg Physician Training Program in Addiction Disease, president of the American Society of Addiction Medicine, Dr. Sean Kim Harris, who's adolescent substance abuse research program at Boston Children's Hospital, Dr. Sharon Levy, who's a professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School and director of the Adolescent Substance Abuse Program at Children's Hospital Boston. Dr. Christine Miller, who's a pharmacologist who's been involved with a firm dedicated to pharmacology research. Dr. Kimber Richter, another one who's a tobacco rehab person. Dr. Paula Riggs, who's serving adolescents at the Addiction Research and Treatment Services in Colorado. Dr. Howard C. Samuels, founder of the Hills Treatment Center. Dr. Catherine Wells, who's the director of the Child Protection Team at Children's Hospital and part of the drug court system. And Dr. Krishna Upadhyaya, who's also involved with the Boston University rehab system. So it's clear who they're trying to protect. You'll even find Sabat praised by guys like Robert DuPont, whose Bensinger DuPont consulting firm has made a mint from selling those very piss tests that the court-ordered marijuana rehabbers have to pay for when they're busted for marijuana in a state that doesn't legalize it. So legalizing marijuana is going to save lives in many ways. And for some, it's by giving them away off of these prescription opiates. Now, whether there's sufficient evidence to prove that that's going to work is irrelevant when trying to prove it isn't going to kill anybody. But staying addicted to those opiates just might. Kevin Sabat is right, though, in asserting that Americans deserve drug policy based on science, not ideology. But if Kevin Sabat really believed that, he'd be out of a job. That's for you, Kevin, at Project Samuel, Smart Approaches to Marijuana Use, Except Legalization. And of course, as Chris Goldstein tells you, the SMART part stands for stoners must all receive treatment. You're not fooling anyone, Kevin. Got our eyes on you, man.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid.
Well, that's the best prognosis I've heard all day. Thanks, Rodney. It's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. And when we return, we got more from the latest in marijuana news to talk about. Stay tuned to the Marijuana Agenda.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. Arr. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here at Toker Talk Radio. Had some guests checking in earlier today during the show. You may have seen me jump off camera for a while. It's always great to have guests come in from red states. I forget which red state they're from, actually, but... they'd never seen or done dabs before. So once again, I got to break someone's dab virginity. It's always fun getting the chance to do that. Really appreciate all those who come out here to Delta 9 House. You can find us at delta9house.com, or you can use the really cool URL, delta9.house. Yeah, Delta9.house. That's pretty cool. I like that one. And the Delta 9 House, we had 95% occupancy, or 93% occupancy. We only had 4 days that we did not have guests staying here at Delta 9 House. So pretty amazing, if you ask me. And just to let you know, man, if you want to stay here this summer, you definitely want to get your reservation in as soon as you can. You can find both of our rooms. They have direct URLs on Airbnb to Delta or indica.delta9.house and sativa.delta9.house. Prices start at $49 a night. That comes with breakfast and coffee in the morning. We've also now got driver service, $15 one-way, $25 round trip, anywhere you want to go in the Portland metro area. I am not taking you to Boise for $25. Anywhere you want to go in the Portland metro area, you can do that now at Delta Nine House. Just log on and give us a call, give us a note. We'll set it all up for you. Also, a quick update about this show and the podcast. We're finally now, I believe, completely set as far as the new vision. And that is the Cannabis Headline News is now the free podcast. The 5-minute headline news thing I do off of marijuanamoment.net is now absolutely free. And it has its own podcast feed. It's a public podcast feed, free to everybody. And you can get it through the Libsyn account. Now it's Libsyn. And if you want the address, it's mjagenda.libsyn.com/RSS. And that'll give you the feed for the Cannabis Headline News 5-minute daily podcast. But now you can also find it on all of the podcast aggregators like iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and SoundCloud. Got them all now. And there's a special custom short address you can use to get to it. I'm going to put the first one in the chat room, and then you can understand how the rest of them work. But it's rad-r.us/CHN iTunes. Okay, so the rad-r.us is my custom Radical Russ short URL service, right? rad-r.us/CHN for Cannabis Headline News, CHN iTunes, I-T-U-N-E-S. And that'll get you the Cannabis Headline News podcast subscription link on iTunes. And you can subscribe absolutely free. Now, the rest of those outlets are the same way, same address, right? rad-r.us/CHN. And then you fill the rest of it in with Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeart, SoundCloud, or Google Play. And that'll get you the podcast link on those five other podcast aggregators. Or again, the main link, and I'll probably make a short link for it. Main link, though, is mjagenda.libsyn.com/RSS. So now you can get it. And if you just go to my Twitter feed for the show, at MJ Agenda Show on Twitter, I posted cards for each of those links so that you could have the addresses. And there's a post up on the MJAgenda.com website so that you can get that. Now, keep in mind, the free podcast feed for the 5-minute news is the public free feed. If you want to get the podcast feed for the first hour, the whole first hour, Marijuana Agenda Show, or you want to get the podcast feed for both hours that includes this Toker Talk radio show, you got to pay for those. It's $4.20 a month for the first hour, $9.99 a month to get both hours. You can get the subscription information at mjagenda.com. Once you've submitted your patronage, either $4.20 a month, $9.99 a month, or more, then on mjagenda.com, there will be a link in the top right corner of the website, a private RSS feed. Now, that private feed, you have to plug it in manually to your iTunes or to any of your other feed aggregators because they don't support the pay function that we've got going. So you manually have to subscribe through iTunes or however you get your podcast. If you got any problems with it, just email me. I'm Russ@MJAgenda.com. Russ@MJAgenda.com should get you through to me. So thank you so much for all of that. We appreciate everybody. And, we're still trying to figure out what's going on with our number at 650-LEGAL-MJ. I've got some voicemails to play for you, but they won't play. Like the interface for Google Voice refuses to play them. So we're going to have to do some troubleshooting to figure out what's going on with that. But we will update you as soon as we know more about it. Now, I want to rant off the top of my head here about the lead story today. My God, what the hell is going on in the minds of some people when they think of those of us who use drugs? And again, I don't hold cannabis users up to be any better a drug user than anybody else uses any other drug. I don't judge people that use heroin or OxyContin or fentanyl or cocaine or methamphetamine or acid or any other drug. It's none my business, right? None ya. As long as you're not hurting me, I don't care, right? Well, some people take the idea of, is it hurting me, you know, to extremes. And they start to look at what a financial cost might be and considering a financial cost to be a sort of harm. And if you missed the news earlier today, I'll just summarize the story. Basically, it's this town, Middletown, Ohio, right? Let's pick as cornbread and apple pie a name we can, right? Middletown, Ohio. The police chief there says, or fire chief there, says that they're doing 6 to 8 opioid overdose runs a day with their first responders, with their EMTs. Now, these EMTs are equipped with Narcan. That's the brand name for naloxone, which is the opiate reversal, the overdose reversal drug. It's literally a cure for an opiate overdose. Someone's dying, you can give them this stuff, and they will live. They'll bring them right out of it, and it's fast, right? Bring them right out of it. And you got like a 1 hour window. Someone could be laying there overdosing for a half hour and you could still give them the Narcan and have a good chance of bringing them back. Okay. So they're doing these runs. They say they do 6 to 8 opioid overdose runs a day. They said last year total, there were 532 overdoses in this town. This town, people, Middletown, right? Now, this year, there's already 577 overdoses. And last year, the fire department spent $11,000 on naloxone. This year, they've already spent $30,000 on naloxone. And so the city councilman, Dan Picard, decides that, you know what? We're spending a lot of money on this naloxone. And that sometimes we're helping these people 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. They keep overdosing. We keep having to go out with 911. You have to keep going out with the EMS, pump them full of naloxone. And we spent $30,000 on this stuff. Maybe, just maybe, we ought not give it to people who keep overdosing. He has proposed a 3 strikes and you're dead system. The 3 strikes and you're dead works this way. If you overdose and you call the 911 and they bring the EMS and they pump you full of naloxone, you're sentenced to community service in the amount that equals what it costs to send the EMS out to you and the cost of the Narcan, cost of the naloxone, right? So it's already odious enough, right? Like, we'll help you, but you're going to pay for it. You know, it's just like Christ would do, right? So that's for the first shot. And then the second shot, you know, you overdose again. All right. Well, once again, we'll give you community service. We'll give you, you know, enough community service to pay for the drug. But under this proposal from Councilman Dan Picard, if you overdose the third time, this is his quote. If the dispatcher determines that the person who's overdosed is someone who's been part of the program for 2 previous overdoses and has not completed the community service and has not cooperated in the program, then we wouldn't dispatch. If you didn't do your community service to pay for the overdose treatment drug that saved your life twice, then you're fucked for the third time. They're just going to let you die. They're not going to send EMS to help you for your overdose. Because by law, if they show up, if the fire department shows up, they have to provide the naloxone. They can't withhold it. So Picard's just proposing they don't show up. They never get dispatched. Just let the heroin or fentanyl or OxyContin addicted person having an overdose die. Now, the thinking that goes behind this, I know how these people think. I lived in Idaho, man. I grew up with this type of mentality that looks at drug users as some sort of lesser creature, someone devoid of willpower and morality, someone who is a slave to their drug, and looks at them as human garbage. I know how they think. and they're thinking about Narcan, is that they're doing you a favor. Why, you overdosed and you were going to die, but we'll do you a favor and save your life with this Narcan. But you're going to pay for it. And so they think that if you overdose multiple times, well, you're just not getting the message. You're abusing the Narcan. You're abusing your heroin or your opioid or whatever you're taking. You're abusing that knowing they're going to come back and rescue you and save your life. So we'll do it twice. But if you do it a third time, we're just going to have to let you die in our Christian nation, right? So what's so maddening about this, this view of drug use and drug addiction as a moral failing, as somebody who's lacking impulse control, self-control, responsibility, whatever, is they think that making threats of severe consequences changes someone's mind who's addicted. Now, it may in some cases, but generally speaking, the problem with being addicted to something is that you're addicted to it and that you don't make rational choices based on the consequences of your behavior, because the only consequence you are concerned with is getting high. And so to say, well, we'll not come and get you if you overdose the third time, so just stop doing heroin. You're just going to have to stop doing heroin because we're not going to come out the third time. You already overdosed twice, so now you have to stop. Yeah, think of how maddening that is, right? To the person who has overdosed twice, right? That seems to me the kind of person who, after the first overdose, was still in the grips of enough addiction that they kept using it in a unsafe fashion, right? That's the person you think that a logical consequence is going to make them make a rational decision. This is the same sort of mindset of people who want to restrict women's right to their reproductive futures because, oh, well, she's just using abortion as birth control. She's come in and had 5 abortions or 6 abortions. She shouldn't. She's just, you know, they think that you're doing them a favor again and that you're abusing some sort of privilege rather than exercising your right to do with your body whatever the hell you want to, so long as you don't harm others. And I'm sorry, financial harm isn't enough. Pointing out that the city has to pay X thousands of dollars to keep its people from dying is not enough. Suppose that the temperatures on the planet rise a precipitous few degrees and we have all sorts of epidemic of wildfire spreading across the country because everything's dry and a lot of heat. And it starts costing us twice or 3 times the amount of money to put out these fires. Would we start complaining about that? Oh my God, last year we spent X on fires and this year we're spending 3X on fires. No, you just would put out the fire because you have to. There's not a choice here. It doesn't matter whether there's more money spent or not. It's what needs to be done. The same applies to Narcan, to getting this to be, and especially in the grips of an opiate epidemic. You're not going to solve the opiate epidemic by refusing to treat the people who are suffering from it, you're just going to create more corpses. That's all. That doesn't begin to solve the problem. It just eliminates one of the mitigating solutions to death. Can't understand why anybody would even think they could propose that, much less someone who's an elected official for a city council in America. 3 strikes and you're dead? For shame, Dan Picard, for shame.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. Trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. Had to give me some fresh water. Hope you're having a great day. It's a beautiful day here in Portland, Oregon. Got guests in both the rooms at Delta 9 who are just delighted to be here. It's great to welcome people here to our home, and I hope you get a chance to visit someday. And if you do, before you book it on Airbnb, send me a request through Airbnb. I'll get you a special discount rate. Get a special discount rate to the listeners of the Marijuana Agenda. But you got to let me know in advance so I can send you the special cost price thing through Airbnb. So you can hit me up at russ@mjagenda.com or hit me up through the Airbnb app. All right. Another story in the news that I wanted to discuss has to do with this bill in California. Senate Bill 162. This bill would prohibit medical cannabis and non-medical marijuana licensees, so all pot shops, dispensaries, all cannabis growers, medical or recreational, from advertising or using branded merchandise. A licensee shall not advertise medical cannabis or medical cannabis products through the use of branded merchandise, including but not limited to clothing, hats, or other merchandise with the name or logo of the product. Why? Why? Why do we need these commercial bans? Why do we need these advertising bans? And why would you prevent a dispensary, pot shop, a grower from having a t-shirt or a hat or a keychain or a pen or a fridge magnet or whatever the hell else? I don't understand this. You've made it legal. You made it legal for adults. But now you want to treat it like it's pornography. Like it can't be seen. It can't be seen or promoted. No one can know about it. It's this terrible, evil thing. All right, we won't put you in prison over it anymore, but can't let anyone know you're doing it. It's disgusting. What kind of thinking is this? I can see beer t-shirts. I can see even cigarette swag that still exists. Of course, it's always a WOTC. It's always a what about the children? Oh my God, the children might see a t-shirt promoting Harborside Health Center, or they might see a sticker. Somebody might have a sticker pointing to the Greenleaf Dispensary, and that'll make the kids want to smoke pot because, you know, otherwise they hate it. What is the thinking going on here? First of all, marijuana doesn't need any advertisement. Marijuana doesn't need any advertisement. People know what it is. People that want it can get it. Right. It's not as if banning the advertising is going to change anyone's attitudes toward it. And it's not if allowing the advertising is going to sway people one way or another. It's just going to lock in little regional and little neighborhood shops from competition, from people being aware of where the other shops are, what's going on with their prices or their store, or their brand or their attitude. It's really just a form of bigotry. It's like we don't deserve our free speech rights because what we do is disgusting and it's awful and we're just, they're just bigots against it. That's really what it comes down to. I don't understand why marijuana should be subject to any sort of restrictions more onerous than the restrictions that have already been placed on alcohol and tobacco. Treat marijuana like alcohol? We meant that. When we voted on that, we meant that. Treat marijuana like alcohol. We'll cede some ground. We will actually cede some ground to our opposition in the points of it shouldn't be advertised with cartoon characters, right? We shouldn't do things that blatantly appeal to kids, like coming up with packaging that looks like a Butterfinger bar and calling it Butterfinger, you know, ripping off brands and stuff like that. We'll concede to that. We will. That, yeah, we agree. And we agree that it's a product for adults. And so we ought to have reasonable limitations to keep it away from kids. Like, we can't have the dispensaries advertising during the Transformers cartoon, let's say, right? We don't, that we can see those things. We're willing to accept that kind of modest, moderate regulation, but to outright completely ban it, any sort of mention, any sort of promotion, any sort of merchandise is going too far. And it's just an appeal to bigotry, not an appeal to rational reason. We've got the celebration of alcohol in this society. We've got Oktoberfest and Brewfest and Cinco de Mayo and St. Patrick's Day and Super Bowl and all of these holidays and celebrations and festivals that revolve around, promote, and celebrate alcohol. And I'm not against that. Hell, I like a Cinco de Mayo as much as the next guy. Get me a margarita. Sounds like fun. My issue is, how can we reconcile that social attitude with this need to ban any commercial speech for marijuana? Now, the Kevin Sabets of the world, those type of people will say, well, it's already bad enough with alcohol. It's already bad enough with alcohol. We should have stopped that when we had the chance, but we didn't. We should have banned it 10,000 years ago. We should have had alcohol prohibition 10,000 years, 1900 BC rather than 1980, maybe. But it's too late now. The horse is out of the barn. Ship's left the station. It's too late. Nothing we can do. We have to accept commercials for beer on the Super Bowl. We have to accept all the promotions and celebrations of alcohol. We have to accept Hoda and Kathy Lee drinking huge wine glasses on morning television when presumably some of the littlest kids are still at home with mom. We just have to accept that. Too late for that. Too ingrained in our culture. So by God, we're going to stamp out the marijuana one before it gets started. That's really their attitude. That's the Sabet attitude, is that, whoops, we fucked up with alcohol. So by God, we're not going to fuck up with the rest of them. Now, that makes a certain logical sense from that perspective, but it's the wrong perspective. Because the perspective isn't about, oh, here's a substance and we didn't regulate it right. Now we'll regulate this substance correctly. It fails at that level on the fact that alcohol is a completely different substance than marijuana is. But it also fails on the idea that you're regulating the substances. Alcohol doesn't care if it's banned or legal. Cannabis doesn't care if it's banned or legal. The people who use them do. It's not the problem of regulating alcohol or cannabis. It's the problem of regulating the people who use alcohol in a manner that is separate and unequal from the people who use marijuana. That's what the marijuana agenda is all about. Treat me like my beer drinking friends, that I can enjoy my substance. I can go to work. I can raise my kids. I can go to school, and I don't have to worry about losing it all because I made the safer choice. It's about treating us equals, as equals, treating us equally. And that's where this analogy fails about wanting to limit or prohibit advertising. It's saying to us, well, we fucked up on the commercial speech with alcohol, so you don't get any commercial speech rights. What? Yeah, we messed up and allowed the alcohol industry to have rights. We never should have done that, so you can't have rights. Why are we getting pinged for what the alcohol industry did? We're safer than them. Yeah, we know, but, you know, there's beer ads on everything and beer's all, you know, ingrained in professional sports and stuff. And that was really a bad public health idea. So we're not going to let you do that. Yeah, but if we did, wouldn't we be taking some of the business from them? And our product doesn't kill people? Oh, yeah. But you people are awful and disgusting, and pot's a nasty, dirty thing, and it can never be seen. It has to be behind closed doors with the curtains shut, and you can never have it out in public or gather together in public to use it. It's disgusting. Really, that's the way we ought to treat alcohol. But, you know, we missed that opportunity. We missed it a long time ago. Should have done that then. No, really, that's what these people believe. Really. Kevin Sabet and their types actually would, if they had the magic wand, they would treat alcohol like marijuana, like they want to treat marijuana. They'd treat alcohol so that, you know, if you got caught with alcohol, you'd have to have a mandatory screening to see if you're an alcoholic. And then we'll, if there's a real problem, then we'll sentence you to a rehab, alcohol rehab, that you have to go to. And then you have to take piss tests every day to determine whether or not you've drank any alcohol. And if you have, then we send you to jail. And if you're Anheuser-Busch, or if you're Samuel Adams, or if you're Rogue Brewing, if you're any of these people making the alcohol, well, you have to go to prison. We have to seize all your assets, and we have to send you guys to prison because you're the manufacturers of the alcohol. Seriously, that's what Kevin Sabet and those guys would do if they could. They'll concede they can't. But deep in their heart, they would prohibit alcohol. They would make alcohol illegal. They would make cigarettes illegal. They really believe that the best possible society is one where everybody's sober. That would be the best possible society. Everybody's sober. Of course, everybody's album collection would then be like, what, Perry Como and Yanni and, the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Wouldn't have a whole lot of Hendrix albums left. You'd have to pretty much get rid of your Eagles collection. Forget about Journey or Van Halen. You're not listening to any of that. And God forbid you even think about listening to the Jefferson Airplane or Grateful Dead. Hell no. No way. Can't have that. That's what their totally sober world would be like. I'm sorry. I'll take this one. I think this is a much better world where some of us use drugs and most of us use them responsibly. And none of us deserve to die because we do. All right, we'll take a break and we'll be right back to close up shop here at the Marijuana Agenda. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Federal prosecutors have been ordered to pursue the toughest possible sentences for criminal suspects. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memo May 10th rolling back Obama-era reforms that eased sentencing for some nonviolent drug offenders. Anthony Papa is the manager of media and artist relations for the Drug Policy Alliance. Papa says Sessions' reinstatement of harsher sentencing policies will destroy families because the breadwinners will be locked up for extensive periods of time.
Not only is going to put people with drug problems away that should be treated medically, not punitively, he's going to affect many family members of those that are being incarcerated.
The National Association of Assistant United States Attorneys says the policy will, quote, restore the tools that Congress intended to punish drug suspects. For United News International, I'm Neelit Uni.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for our Government at Work, the latest in cannabis reform at the local, state, federal, and international level. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back here. Just a couple of minutes as we close up shop here for another day at the Marijuana Agenda. In our chat room, I have posted the link to Kevin Sabet's Huffington Post piece. So feel free to log on there and leave some comments for Kevin. He probably skips over mine, but be glad to hear from more of you, especially those of you who can discount what he has to say about marijuana being a substitute, a cure, a help for the opioid epidemic. If you've had your own specific personal information on that, one of the things he'll say is anecdotes are not evidence. And that's true. Anecdotes are not evidence. But when you're alive and you would have been dead, for your sample of one, that's all the evidence you need. See, when Kevin poo-poos this idea that marijuana may be useful for treating people suffering from dependence issues or abuse of drug issues, I have to laugh. Because I have my own N equals one sample of myself in two different circumstances where without access to marijuana, I'd have probably still been hooked on those drugs. Three that I can think of. Yeah, three now that I think about it. Number one, I started drinking alcohol when I was 16 years old, and I became a very dedicated binge drinker. I could drink more than you, faster than you, longer than you. I was Bluto from Animal House. Then at age 22, I discovered marijuana, and from that point, my drinking rapidly declined as my marijuana use increased. Now, would I have remained an alcoholic as drinking as hard as I had in my college years when I flunked out with a 1.88 GPA? I don't know if I could have continued that output, but it's likely I'd have tried. Then, in the mid-90s, I found myself suffering from a terrible addiction to methamphetamine. Had myself a rocky relationship with that drug for about 18 months. And the times when I needed to stop using it, to go to sleep, to just stop tweaking, marijuana was there and helped me to come down, to stop using it for a while. But I didn't really stop with meth until it sent me to the hospital. I had to have a life-saving operation. And after that, and this was in mid-90s, and they gave me a prescription for like 100, I think it was like 100 Vicodin. And I started using the Vicodin after the surgery, and I really like the Vicodin. Vicodin and Oxycontin and opioids, if you've not used them, are like a real big soft hug. they're really a nice, warm, fluffy place to be. And I found myself popping those Vicodin and quickly discovering that, yeah, I could be addicted to this. I could be on this for a while. Thankfully, marijuana was there because after a while, the Vicodin started stopping up the pipes, if you know what I mean, and well, I've got a lot of tolerances, but I will not tolerate not being able to crap. So the marijuana was there. It got me off the oxy. So marijuana saved me from oxy, meth, and alcohol. Take that, Kevin Sabet. That's all the time we got. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.